Welcome to Cloudlandia,
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson, it's good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Welcome
to Cloudlandia. I had a chance to see you the other day, but there really wasn't a time for a personal discussion when there were 496 other people.
That's right. That was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good end of the year thing for Joe and a kickoff.
So he's gone.
Yep.
So we should say, so for listeners, our good friend and collaborator, Joe Polish, is off on a 1-year sabbatical. And so far, so good. I haven't heard from him yet. I know he's starting off in Florida and doing I think 5 straight days of meditation. He's doing a meditation workshop. So that's great. What a great way to start the reset.
Have you ever done anything like that?
No, I have not. I have some friends who've done silent retreats, like done, a 7-day silent retreat. I don't know. Have you done anything like that?
Well, here's the question. I think both of us share a particular capability that we're good on our own.
Yeah.
In other words, I can be days by myself.
Yeah.
And I don't feel disconnected as a result of being by myself. So
right.
I just wonder and there's certain people that I really enjoy being with, Babs in my case, and you have your special people. But I can always find things to keep my mind busy and interested, and I've tried, I've done 1-day meditation retreats, and I found them kind of boring. The thing was that I was supposed to be by myself, and I was, but I was just doing the normal things that I do when I'm by myself while other people were meditating. So, And I find as I get older, I'm becoming more and more selective, just what I will allow myself to be connected to.
Yeah, I've discovered, I have had a few days here over the holidays where it was just me. And I have found a channel on YouTube that is 10 hours of a crackling fireplace. And Dan, that has become so meditative in a way that I can't explain. One of my favorite
Along's the loop.
10 hours.
Yeah, it's 10-hour loop.
10-hour loop of crackling fire.
Oh, well, that's really good because.
There's no music.
They used to have it on cable, when I used to watch television. And it was on cable, but it was like a 5-minute loop. You could tell after about 5 minutes.
That's funny.
I've seen that sequence before,
The crackling, the sounds of it. But it reminded me so much of circa, let's say, 1990, 89, 91, in that era there, the first early 90s, the Delta Hotel in Meadowvale,
on
the 401.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know where it is. Yeah.
Very close to Georgetown.
Had a fireplace.
Wood burning fireplace in the lobby.
Yep.
And
I remember it.
One of my favorite things to do was to go get some magazines or a book and my journal and go to the lobby of the Delta Hotel on a Sunday afternoon. And I would sit there for hours by the fire, just thinking and reading magazines and, you know, drinking hot chocolate. And it was just like such a blissful time, you know, in that period. And it it was so just, you know, I find it meditative. This has kind of reminded me of that, you know, this last discovering this channel now.
So were you a military kid? I mean, your dad was in the Air Force. So
only for the first, just for the first 2 years. And then my dad got a job with Air Canada. Oh. We settled in Ontario then. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I was in South Korea for 2 years, you know, working in the army, and we had a full family base. So they have an organization in the Army which is called MAG, MAG, and MAG stands for Military Assistance Group. And these individuals work with their counterparts in the whatever army they're in. So if it's in Korea, they're working with the South Korean Army. So they're not actually interacting with American troops. They're interacting with officers, NCOs, and you know, the military of the group, and they train the group in American organizational techniques and strategies and everything else. But one of the perks, if you're in the MAG, is that you get to bring your family with you. And you know, when America goes overseas, they bring America with them. So our base, if you didn't look above the top of the wall, where you could clearly see that the mountains there were not American mountains. The rest, if you kept your eyes, you know, didn't look above the wall and you looked around you, it could have been Sioux City, Iowa. You know, it could have been anywhere. Yeah. Could have been a shopping center, bowling alley, you name it. They had a golf course, everything. And then there were ranch houses. You know, there were probably 50 ranch houses. And this is where the families lived. And so one of the things, I ran the entertainment group there, and we had a center which was a theater, and I was able to put on plays, and it was probably one of the great entertainment spots, you know, that you could ask for, because when you put on plays, you would have women, you know, you could put on women and children. And so you could have a full cast, you know, like that, where ordinary army base, you just probably men. Get women, you could get Red Cross. They didn't have many women in the army at that time. So it would have been sort of, they had Red Cross nearby, so you could get that, but you wouldn't get the children. And that was great. And, but I got to talk to them, and on average, these kids who are 14 years old, this had been their seventh assignment. And two things about that. That was in mainland days. And what I noticed were they were a bit more mature than you would find at home. A 14-year-old seemed more like a 17 or 18-year-old. Right. The reason was they had to sever their relationships every 2 years, move to a new place, get a whole new set of relationships. And if, you know, they might write or drop notes or anything else. And I think that I'm sure that that situation still exists in the modern army, but kids have social media now. So they probably, you know, they stay totally in touch with everyone they've ever known. So it's probably a real upgrade in the experience of being in a situation where physically you had to, in the mainland, you had to move every 2 years, but in Cloudlandia, you could stay constant with your relationships going back. Yeah. So a very interesting difference. But one of the things I noticed is that they had an ability not to get too deeply involved wherever they were. And they were, you know, they had good manners. Most of them could, you know, talk, you know, really well in conversation and everything. But you had a sense that they had learned how to keep it sort of on the surface, not go really too deep. But I suspect that's changed now with social media.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the, you look at how easy it is to stay in touch. I mean, you look at how far flung our relationships are now. That's pretty amazing. When I think about, like, really contrasting what was going on in 1989, or let's call it 1990.
I'm talking about 1960s, you know, 65 to 67. Yeah.
So this is a great swath because you're talking about, you know, 20 years even before that. I'm talking now we're talking about today, like the difference between 2021 and 1971 or 1967 is, you know, completely the difference. When you think about the difference between 1960s and the early 1990s, there's not that much difference, right? When you really look at that compared to the difference between
music 1990s
and the 60s. Well, the music was better, but the distribution of methods for it were the same. You know,
I guess, because it's sort of broke down, you know, I was noticing about 5 years ago that the best tours of the previous year, the 10 top tours, all the groups or individuals, they were on the best tours, the 10 top grossing tours in this United States, had been really popular in the late 60s and early 70s.
And yeah, isn't that like that's 2015. The legacy?
Yeah, like the you know, the Stones.
Yeah, the Rolling Stones, U2.
And everything. And the reason is because their audience had been a national audience, and no singer today can have a national audience. You can have a really big niche audience, but you can't have a national audience.
Yeah, that's something, isn't it? I mean, that's what I wonder about right now. Like, I look at that as that's a big difference, right? Because there was only one, who was the big talk show? There was only one, there was only one Ed Sullivan, and there was only one American Bandstand, and there was only one, you know, Casey Kasem's Countdown. All those things that everybody had a centralized curation. The output was, you only had to keep your eye on, you know, half a dozen spouts that was coming out of.
You know, it's really interesting. The leading news commentators in those days, late 60s, early 70s, had all made their reputation as war correspondents during the Second World War. Edward R. Murrow, Mike Wallace, Walter Cronkite.
Yeah,
these had been 25 and 30 year old war correspondents in Europe, in the South Pacific, and they had established their reputations on radio, and then when television came around, they had big audiences that they could plug into right away who had been radio listeners and now became TV watchers.
And, well, that's really how they approached the news. And even entertainment then, wasn't it, when they were just kind of taking radio and doing it on television? That's so that made all the sense in the world.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really interesting. And you've talked about, we've had this discussion before about, you know, things that we're talking about, the Little Rascals, you know, that had been one of the first really serialized products in the movies in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And yes. they were really short. I doubt if they were any of them were beyond a half hour. You know, they were
right.
Maybe 15 minutes, a half hour, yeah. whatever they did. But every Saturday in all the movie theaters, it would be part of the feature. Regardless of what the featured movie was, you would have the Little Rascals as a, yeah. as part of your entertainment.
Right.
You were talking about Seinfeld, you know, the selling of all the Seinfeld as a package yeah. and how much yeah. that was worth. But the Little Rascal still runs, you know, I mean, it's a package.
Yes.
It's a property that still runs and they're enjoyable. I mean, if you watch them, yeah. they're extreme. And they were totally integrated in the 1930s, you know, I mean.
Yes. Darla and Alfalfa. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Spanky, and, Buckwheat,
Spanky.
The whole gang.
Yeah, we had the whole gang. And but it was very, very interesting. And they would be the plots are interesting today. I mean, they're.
Yeah.
I think that they were so popular because they were well written. And
yeah.
The kids were really good. I mean, they really.
Well, they were kind of like a mini, like in the same vein as the Three Stooges kind of thing, mm-hmm. humor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the mini mm-hmm. Stooges in a way, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's really interesting. But the thing about us today in 2021, because this is the third day into a new year here.
Yes.
And I want to ask you about this year because I've noticed something different about the year that I had. And I think that your year was more like my year mm-hmm. than your year was like other people's year. So that's we come back to that. But the
bookmark.
The reason I think it's very, very unusual is the vast recorded memory that we have in 2021 of things that happened 25 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, because we have the recordings, we have the sound recordings, we have the video recordings,
yeah.
and my sense is that gives you a totally different perspective on the world. The fact that we now have these long memories, which used to be only passed on by stories, you know, people would mm-hmm. tell stories or anything. But with the internet now, you can go anywhere. You know, I'm completely ADD when it comes to the internet. I go where my brain tells me to go every 2 minutes or every minute.
Yes, like our good friend Dr. Halliwell says, like a toddler at a picnic. That's how we approach the internet.
Yeah, and I came across the one yesterday, which was really interesting because I'm a World War. I was born during World War II, so I've got an attraction to things that are World War II. Topics. And but the most dangerous weapon that the Germans feared most, well, that's a great headline. You really, really want to know what the Germans feared, because everybody feared the Germans. Everybody feared the Germans. What were they scared of? And it was a thing called Bailey Bridges. This is what they were really scared of. And this civil servant with no particular background for it created a bridge that could be carried in soldiers' backpacks. And it mm-hmm. was like a Lego. It was like Lego that they could come to a stream that was out where the Germans had knocked out a bridge. And if it wasn't too deep, in other words, that they could actually clip these parts of the bridge together. And within about 2 or 3 hours, they could put a complete bridge over, let's say, a 20 or 30 foot span, and then the jeeps could go over, and then the trucks could go over, and they were called Bailey Bridges, and they could take them back down afterwards, you know, if they didn't.
Yeah.
So it was just a one-off, and it was really, really scary to the Germans, because they thought knocking out the bridges would stop the advance of the Americans and the British. This was British, but the Bailey Bridges were just they're like the container box that changed the world trade. You know, it's just a very simple thing, and all you needed was pliers. You know, you just needed basically pliers to put the thing together, very, very interesting. But that's the sort of thing I'll come across, and I'll say, boy, that's really fascinating. That's really fascinating. I'd never heard about that. Here I am, you know, I'm going on 77, and I said, in all my World War II explorations, I never came, but this was crucial. This was really crucial. This, you could put a bridge anywhere pretty well, you know, and the soldiers could carry it in their backpacks, or it could be carried in the back of the truck or something like that. And they didn't need engineers. They didn't need any specialists. They knew how to put up a bridge, Bailey Bridge. Yeah, there you go.
Well, I love things like that, like in isolation, when you start to think about the impact that one simple innovation can have, you know? And now, how we kind of take that for granted.
I have to give myself credit because I remembered what I wanted to remember. Okay.
So perfect.
I got a really great, great email from a friend on New Year's Eve, you know, just really grateful. And it's been a year of extraordinary change for everybody. And I was sitting there pondering it afterwards. And I said, my year from, if I look at the last 9 months, it's only different from any other year before in terms of my medium of communication. In other words, the only thing that changed over the last year is that instead of doing in-person workshops, I did Zoom workshops.
Yes.
Which I had already been doing for other, you know, for other purposes. I'd already, so it wasn't something new that I had to learn. I just had to, it was the only thing left to actually use. And I did that. But when I look at how I organize my days, my weeks, my quarters, what my projects were, it was exactly 2020 was exactly the same as the year before. It's just that probably 30% more productive because I didn't travel.
Well, that is what I found too. That's exactly right. Like that, you know, we're close 10 months now since, I mean, literally the last place I was in Phoenix.
Chicago. In Phoenix,
no,
right.
It was in Scottsdale,
In Scottsdale, the boulders.
That's right. And but you know, you look at how adaptable everybody became, and I look at it now, and it's like having a jet. We've talked about it. That's really what these Zoom capabilities are. It's like having a jet that you can be wherever you want to be and invite people in. So I look at that, man, just so amazing to be in this early days of Cloudlandia, you know, being where we're at the fully mature. It's open for business now, you know, and we are really at the early stages here. I'm just so happy about it.
Yeah, but I just want to put two pieces of information together because we were on the I Love Marketing the other day, and there were various talks about the tremendous, you know, stress that people were going through, and that people were, you know, there were suicides happening, and people were, you know, going deep into their addictions and everything like that. And I sat and I listened to it, you know, for about 5 minutes, and I said, I didn't do anything different. I mean, socially, what I would do by my side. So I'd like to put the Cloudlandia ability, which both of us have enjoyed enormously, but we were prepared for it before, with the fact that we're okay on our own.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true. But it's interesting because it's not like we had ever done anything like that. Like, it wasn't just like some percentage of the things we were doing were being done in Zoom or, you know, up until March of this year. I had not done any type of Zoom groups, you know, so that being able to adapt or being able to just seamlessly bring things over to that, I think there's, that was just completely fit right in our wheelhouse, you know? Which is fortunate.
And I think, part of us, both of us, our product is a conceptual product. It's not a physical product. So it's a conceptual. Right. And that lends itself extremely well to virtual virtual communication. And the other thing is that our concepts are sort of modular concepts. They build on each other.
Yes.
So,
And they intertwine. I mean, our concepts amplify, each other's concepts too. That's really when people are using them in combination. That's a really that's a really powerful thing.
Yeah, and so I'm just wondering because it's not that I'm unsympathetic to people, but I am sort of unsympathetic to the pain of people I don't know because I tend to be sympathetic to the people I know. But a thought occurred to me is that neither of us sells pain.
Right.
We sell gain.
Yes, that's true. Yes, shortcuts.
Yeah. And I kind of, there like the topic, the speaker and the topic on I Love Marketing. That may have been interesting to me, maybe 45 years ago. But it's not a topic that's really interesting to me right now. It's like taking your pain and turning it into a product. It's like taking your pain and turning it into a product. And I guess there's a period of your life when you're interested in that and there's things to be gained from it. But I'm at a point now where I'm just looking for the next shortcut, as you say, the shortcut.
Yeah.
And, I want things to be more economical. I want things to be simpler. I want things to have a greater multiplier effect to them. And I'm really not trying to solve any problem, and I'm really not trying to eliminate any particular pain at this point in my life.
Yeah, and I think that that's really, this is where we really have the opportunity to create, to literally just embrace the things that we that fit with that. And everybody has that same possibility now. This is why I'm just, man, it blows my mind when I start to think about, I've been thinking because as I shared with you, I've been kind of taking a multi-layered approach to the last, modern civilization through both the American history and the evolutionary history, all of these things, to see the different ways people tell this story of how we got to here, basically. And it's been a fun kind of mental process to think about what's this going to be told, 100 years from now. What is this going to, when we look back at 2020, looking at the beginning of the migration, where everybody has the everybody has a radio station. Everybody has the TV. Everybody has every, you know, the ability to meet with everybody. I've been, I don't know what, since you're not really online as much, have you seen the all the talk about Clubhouse now?
No.
Okay. No. So Clubhouse is the new social media that is just like, it's got everybody's attention right now. And essentially, it's a just a gathering place, audio-wise. It's like a room that you go into, and it's just this discussion. There are people on stage, kind of thing, having a discussion about something. People can listen in or can ask questions or can participate in the conversation. And it's not recorded. There's no trail of it. It's all happening live right now, real time. And there's, you know, thousands of rooms going on, and you are connected with people that you like to follow.
That
and
way.
I wonder, you know, I think back to what it must have been like, you know, in 30 BC when the philosophers were, you know, gathering and discussing life. That's maybe the beginning of thinking about your thinking, right?
Well, at least it recorded, that we have the recordings of what they did.
Yeah.
No, I mean, so, my sense is that it's been going on forever, but you didn't have it actually written down, and people would have discussions over things that had happened in other places and before them. So I think what happened there was sort of a 500-year breakthrough when things were written down and you could transport them from one place to another.
And, I got you.
And they were ideas. And so, you know, people said, well, that's a really interesting idea. Let's have a discussion group. Let's have a clubhouse meeting. Let's have a clubhouse meeting on this idea. But it's not for posterity.
The clubhouses would change. The clubhouses would be wherever the physical gathering was.
Yeah, you know, interesting. Can I tell you what it strikes me? I mean, I only have your description of it to introduce me to it. But I think that one thing we want to create new Cloudlandia places that Mark Zuckerberg can't know about.
Right. But, that's exactly.
The guys at Google, the guy at Twitter, they can't know about this. So they can't record it. They don't know who's doing it. And there's no predictability about when they're going to happen. And my sense is that it's a human response to being infringed upon.
Hmm. And I think, but it's also, now it's an interesting evolution. Like now it'll be really interesting to figure out how the... how it'll be used, you know? Like, I think when people, what I'm noticing is that there are people who are spending hours and hours and hours just in clubhouse rooms, right? Keeping a perpetual conversation going so people can jump in and do this. And so I was, you know, one of the people who's been doing this a lot is Perry Belcher and Fernando Cruz. Fernando's runs one of the big Agora divisions. So I recently just joined Clubhouse, and I got a notice that Perry had a room going on in a at a clubhouse going on. I popped on, and then they see everybody who comes in, and there's, you know, at this point, hundreds of people in this room, and they're talking and, you know, sharing ideas. And then he sees that I came in and, you know, moved me up on stage. And then we just had a,
the stage isn't a real stage. It's a virtual.
No, it's
stage,
just, it's a virtual stage. You can see on the, on your app, just the headshot of who's there and who's speaking. And so he moved me up, not a video. It's just
just a picture.
Yeah. Just a representation of that. This is who's in the room. And then when you're speaking, there's little sort of gray circle, sound waves coming out of your emanating from your thing. So you can see who's talking and who's, who's on stage, and then all the people that are in the room. And, you know, I look at the thing. So they, brought me in both, just said nice, glowing things about me. And then all of a sudden I've got, 280 followers now. My first, 280 people are like all go to follow me. So now if I were to go and start a room,
another clubhouse,
those 280 people would be notified that, hey, Dean Jackson and Dan Sullivan started a room.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's very interesting to me is it's, I'm trying to see how this really could go. But I was talking with Perry that we were kind of likening it to live radio is almost really what it is. And so you could imagine that there would be the kind of thing where you and I could do this in Clubhouse and have hundreds of people just listening in if they wanted to, or to ask questions, or to participate, however it was. But you could, I think that's who's going to be the winners, is scheduling the rooms. Like you can schedule the program and say, this is what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. What I like about it, from what you've told me so far, is that my feeling is that humanity is always much bigger than anything that humanity creates. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's, and this is not a belief that's shared in Silicon Valley,
right.
As an example, or in Hollywood, or on mainstream news and everything, that there's an intelligence factor in technology that the intelligence will exceed that of humanity. And I said, not really. I said, given everything that humanity thinks about and everything that humanity, let's just treat humanity as a, as a reality in the world, in the universe. It's, we don't know if it's beyond the world. We don't know if it's beyond this planet. There's no evidence yet that there's any other intelligence out there besides human intelligence. But when you think of all the things that human intelligence deals with, everything that Silicon Valley is doing represents like a period at the end of a chapter. That human experience is just vastly beyond anything that can be, actually visualized in Silicon Valley, as far as what people talk about. But technology can sort of impose itself. If you think about newspapers impose themselves. Mm-hmm. And then if you wanted the news, you had to get the newspaper. And then radio came along. And all of a sudden, newspapers had to move over a little bit. Somebody else wanted to sit on the bench, and it was radio. Uh-huh. And then television came along, and then 24-hour cable television came along, and then the internet came along. And so now newspapers are gasping for air because they're getting thinner and thinner because the advertiser's saying, you know, it's not such a great place to put your money if you want to get people's attention, you know. And so my sense is that you had social media, which got up to about 2.5. I think Facebook got up about, and they're losing customers now because young people aren't going for Facebook. You know, they're not.
Well, they're all on TikTok and
Yeah. And, you know, if I know young people, they don't like being supervised or watched.
Right.
You know, and so my sense is that that's a human quality. We don't like being supervised and watched. We want spaces. I'll use spaces in the virtual sense that we're using here. Is that I want unless Mark Zuckerberg wants to come on as himself and have a chat on Clubhouse, I don't want him to have any ability to utilize what's happening in this experience beyond what he personally could get out of it. You know, I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, my feeling is that there has been this sense, and the Chinese are very much into this, the communist Chinese are very much into this, that you can basically know what people are up to. And my sense is that human beings don't like other people knowing what they're up to.
Well, I think that's an interesting, I think you're right. I mean, that whole, right before Clubhouse really took over the spotlight here, there was a little period of time right around the election when there was an alternate Facebook or Twitter medium called Parler that was starting to get attention, where you could, you know, speak without censorship, kind of thing. It was really the
That'll get bigger. I mean, that will. My sense is that there will be, within 10 years, there will be another Google that is an alternative Google. There will be every one of them that exists today, there will be an alternative. And part of this will just come out of court cases, because there's some major court cases where verdicts will come in 2021. The big one is Oracle versus Google, where Oracle has the proof that the essential 11,000 lines of coding that really got Google started as a search engine actually belong to Oracle. And they want to get paid for everything that Google's made on it for the last 20 years, because they put in their lawsuit about 15 years ago on this. And Google actually approached them to license it, and then they dropped the licensing agreement and just took the lines. It's a massive, massive court case. It changes the world. And it's the Supreme Court. It's in front of the Supreme Court right now. And
oh, is it really? Wow.
And under the laws of the Constitution, I can't see how Google wins this.
Wow, that's something. I didn't realize that was going on right now.
Facebook's got the same problem, and Twitter's got the same problem. They stole code. And if goes through for Google, then it breaks the whole, breaks the whole thing. Yep.
Yeah, you just imagine, you know, our desire for, I mean, as society, we want freedom and we want these things, but we also want them to be free. And, you know, it's an interesting, you know, if you take away the profit motive for why Google is so great and why Facebook is so great, is because it's in their best interest to engage our attention, because that's the product, right? That's how they monetize. So it's in their best interest to make things as great as possible. But if it were a non advertising model. If they like what's happening now with Apple changing their privacy policies to cut out tracking, that's going to like have a huge problem for Facebook advertising. Mm-hmm. If you can't know that, you know, who you're tracking is the right to show your ads to somebody based on data that you've been tracking them with, that becomes a big problem for Facebook. Because now their mm-hmm. product is there. So it's a really interesting thing.
Well, here's the thing. So I'm looking at big antitrust. Part of this falls under antitrust legislation, and that's where you become so big that competition is no longer possible. That any competition that pops up, you've got a way of, stopping the competition from ever getting a foothold. Okay.
Yeah.
And you reach a line where, you don't own 100% of the market, but you can prevent competition, and that comes under. And the Constitution is really designed to create competition. If you look mm-hmm. at the fundamental purpose of the U.S. Constitution, it's more of an economic, it's to have as little politics as possible getting in the way of economic expansion. That's if I could sum up the U.S. Constitution in a sentence, that's what it is. When I look at the big breakups, Standard Oil is the first one that happened in the 19th, the first century, and you had AT&T because basically Ma Bell owned everything and did it. Each of those industries, the oil business and the telephone business, used two of them, each went 10 times after the breakup. The industries themselves went 10 times because so many new competitors were introduced into the marketplace that things got better and they got cheaper. Mm-hmm. Things got better and they got cheaper. So I think maybe Google has to convince people that, and Facebook and Twitter, they have to convince people that the way they're doing it is always going to be better for the consumer. And the consumer is saying, but if we had 10 Googles, I bet it would be even better.
I wonder,
Clubhouse is in its present form now, but we don't know what it's going to be like, a year from now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everybody's already talking about, how are they going to monetize? How are they going to monetize this? Ads, of course, and, private rooms.
No, you do it. You do it through the power of your conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, let's say you just follow your natural course over the next year, Dean, and you're on this clubhouse, and then you get invited to this clubhouse, and you get invited to this clubhouse. Well, somebody's got to say, this Dean Jackson is really an interesting guy. I'm just going to go to his, to his website and see what he's about. You just monetize your presence on Clubhouse.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really that is what's happening. Like, you look at it right now. Yeah, I just looked there that I'm,
I mean, the last 2 weeks we've had 10 signups from Who Not How.
That's awesome.
Where it's mentioned, we ask, what is the, what's the most important factor that got you to sign up? And 10 people said it was Who Not How. Okay.
That's
I'm not making any money on Who Not How. I mean, Who Not How can sell 10 million copies and I don't make any money on it.
That's right.
So I think that's so great. The same principle as we're talking here.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I immediately looked up after our last Cloudlandia podcast. Beesburger, I said, is there a Beesburger in Toronto? And sure enough, it's about 5 miles from where I am right now, and I can order it, and I can get Beesburger. And it's an existing hamburger place.
Yes.
It's been there for 10 years, this
right.
Hamburger place. But they don't make any mention. They just say, you know, they just talk about their Beesburger, you know. And then I went to one in Chicago, and the menu is exactly the same for the one in Chicago as the one in Toronto.
Okay? Yes, of course.
And my feeling is he's created a free zone. He's created a complete free zone economy.
That's exactly what, you know, that's why I knew you would love that I brought it up to you, because it's exactly
it's a pure, it's a
the distinction between the distinction that he didn't start independent, he didn't start ghost kitchens where it was just, you know, he opened up 300 individual kitchens. He is 100% using excess capacity of existing. He's in collaboration with existing capabilities. That burger place in the Beaches that has been there for 10 years, that he is a blessing to that business right now.
Oh, but yeah. Well, the big thing is they suddenly gain enormous online marketing that they've never had before.
Right.
And that's, you know, if they screw up, that's what they lose. They lose the Cloudlandia connection. They don't.
Yeah.
And it costs them nothing to redesign their menu because the menu is virtual.
Well, that's true. And the great news is that these. That burger restaurant, they're still doing their own thing too.
Sure.
You know, that's what's great. Right. Is that
no? It's
this
pure
is all
freeze,
shipping out the back door. It's just redeploying their capability.
Yeah.
With a different collaborator, and that's really the free zone frontier is, I think, so synonymous with what we have going forward here in Cloudlandia. I mean,
well, here's the thing. I think your clubhouse is a free zone too. I think it's as it exists the way you've described it right now.
Yeah.
I would say that it has the real possibilities of being a free zone. In the sense that all you have to do is show up and gradually be someone that other people want to be in a conversation with you.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, you start to think about the possibilities there. And any of these, you know, being able to just gather, being able to gather a crowd instantly. That's it. All comes down to still the cream is definitely going to rise to the top.
Yep.
I saw an interview with that with Reed Duckshire, the head of Knight Media. That manages Mr. Beast. And I think 6 of the top 10 YouTubers are under their management. Which is so great, you know, that's really the taking the assets and really looking to match their capabilities with, or their reach with amazing capabilities. We're starting to see.
Well, the interesting thing is that podcasting, the entire podcasting universe, which is over, it's certainly over a billion series now, according to Gord Vickman, my podcast manager. He says it's over a million, the number of series, and they have criteria what constitutes a series. So I think it's based on ongoing frequency of a, you know, of a podcast series is constitutes. And anyway, but he, none of that's covered by the FCC, by the Federal Communications Committee. And the thing that I'm seeing is more and more, we're going towards things that can't be regulated in text.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the way you censor a podcast is you don't listen to it anymore.
That's true. that's true. It's a free, again, the dream definitely.
It's a free zone. You take your chances in the free zone. You better be interesting.
Yes. You better be good. That's exactly right.
You better be good. You better be good. You better be useful. You better be interested in her. Nobody's going to live. Yeah. And I think that, so my sense is that, 10 years from now, so we're just finished 2020, that, in 2030, all the titans that they call the titans of the universe, the masters of the universe, Facebook, Twitter, Google, and that, they'll still exist, but they'll be a very, very, a much smaller proportion of the total action that's going on in their space.
Yeah. That's the interesting thing is that our available.
I mean, ABC, CBS, and ABC, CBS, and NBC still exist, but I haven't watched any of them for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. You know,
right? And that's the thing. But the prize jewel is this attention that we're all competing for, and that is. That is linear in real time, and there's only so much of it.
Yeah.
Quality, quality, quality.
Yeah. Who knew?
I can't believe it's been an hour, Dan. And look at
smart,
thing,
good,
I'm
and
like,
smart, good, smart, good, and useful.
Yes. Smart, good, and useful.
Those are useful. I mean, that's nice criteria.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the SGU rating. That's what the SGU index.
Yeah. Well, include that in your VCR presentation. And,
the SGU.
You know, it's going to be a really good. I'll give you a time slot within about a week. I'll tell you. You know, we're putting together the. So there's going to be three. Speakers. So it'll be you, Nick Sonnenberg, who's been doing great work with us. But he's just going to give five tips about using, software as a service. And then Peter Zion.
Oh, nice. I can't wait for that. That's going to be great.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's good. Good.
Well, I guess I will.
You're my first repeater.
Oh wow! Well, that is that's great. We'll institutionalize it.
Back by popular demand.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, you got to earn that spot every year. That's right.
No, you just create the spot every year.
SGU, got to keep your SGU index high.
Yeah. Anyway, this would be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
All right.
Me too. Okay, Dan.
Are you good? Are you good a week from now? I am.
I am. Yes, of course.
Okay.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
That was great. We covered, that was a fast hour.
It really went fast. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, good.
Have a great day.
Take care.
Bye. Okay, bye.